Thursday night generational change. I just realized we're competing with Real Progress in Action. So I sent them a message and tried to siphon some of their people.
Tell them to get their butts over here.
We love those guys. I'm Jen.
I'm Peter.
And good show tonight.
I think so. I think we got
And we're going to, we have a lot of good stuff. I have a story time.
A lot of that good stuff happening. Yeah. But what we do have, which is going to be very important, throws rotten fruit. Oh, we've already got a troll here tonight. Well, that's cool.
That's the same
person.
But
if you could be nice, please hit the like button and
share.
She's
just here to be mean. But what's so ironic, and this is why I think it's a friendly troll situation, because ultimately, all of those comments really help our channel.
Well, they really do. So just keep complaining.
So like it doesn't, fine.
It does, absolutely. So we're obviously glad that you're all here. And obviously, we're just starting out. But as you know, we have a wonderful first guest who's going to be coming on in a couple of minutes. She is a county commissioner in Clark County, Georgia.
Athens Clark County.
Oh, it's...
Athens hyphen Clark County.
Ah, okay. Well, yes. I'm not a Georgian, so I wouldn't know.
But I don't know that, but I do know about Athens, and I know that it's really cool, and I know the Indigo Girls are from there, and that's really all I need to know.
That, of course.
And I actually have a cool friend from camp growing up that lives in that area. So.
Well, you should be very proud of yourself.
I'm just saying, that's what I know about Athens.
So without further ado, we are going to play something very important for you guys, because County Commissioner Mariah Parker is not only a tremendous progressive in the labor movement, but she's also a very talented musician artist. So
She can move.
So I think you guys are going to enjoy this. So make sure that I don't screw this up.
Did you share screen?
I didn't, but now I'm going to. Knew that there was an extra
component. Share screen. Chrome tab.
Enjoy this one, guys.
The people now have the power.
The United Campus Workers in Georgia are fighting for fair wages, fair raises, and for fair funding.
Workers of America, United Campus Workers of Georgia, 3265, bitch.
Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on?
Ship the boxes, they Swiffer and they mopping, look chipper when never talking and whipping the shopping carts. They pack the beer in the walk-ins and stack the weird little boxes, keep our kitchen fridges stocked and our financial market selfish. They clocking for over 50 bucks and bear the coffin to like 60 thrifty chuds and get spit on like sitting ducks, and they are sick of getting fucked. So you ever wanted to honor them? Here's my ask for all my hominids, collective bargaining, Amazon and Target and FedEx and Walmart and Instacart and Whole Foods till we all get what we are to get. Workers run the company. There isn't any argument. So are you with them? Are you in? El pueblo unido, jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido, jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido, jamás será vencido. Jamás será vencido. Jamás será vencido. Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on?
Imagine a minute, millions of average women and men in the tragic position of trading and passion for wages and cash till they shackled by capitalism. Imagine a minute, millions of average citizens planting the spinach and waxing the kitchens and stacking the linens, contractors and renters and tenants, the labor extracted for pittance. What if they coordinated to address the sort of state of it in an organization? Cause fucking what? That's what organized labor does. And not even sort of, it's more of the crux. Taking the power from hoarders of bucks, big bankers offshore and they cuts, returning the value of labor to those who created the billionaires. Oh, it's us. So if you dated and tell me about waking up early, the earning back. If you sad about Bernie, if you got a curious turning and had it with passively lurking, we got your back and we happy to have you out on the picket line, actively working. Go in. Which side are you on?
El Pueblo, you need them. Hamas that I've been seeing them. El Pueblo, you need them. Hamas that I've been seeing them. El Pueblo, you need them. Hamas that I've been seeing them.
This time. Remove, add.
And without further ado, you have just witnessed a...
I guess it
just streams right into the next video.
This
very
is what
interesting.
Happens.
Yeah, well, you know, you said I'm not very tech savvy, but I'm learning as we go along. She is the county commissioner from Athens, Clark County, Georgia. Mariah Parker, welcome to Generational Change. You're on mute.
Wait, you're on mute.
Thank y'all so much for having me.
No, you're awesome. I love that. I love this song. And I'm normally not a hip hop person. I love hip hop dance, but I don't normally love hip hop music. And I really loved it. And I love the way that you incorporated that very old sound, that very like Southern Railroad old sound in with the new. I thought it was really pretty. I really liked it. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was very, very cool. Welcome to our show.
It's so great to be here. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, so I get to meet the myth and the legend.
Oh, good God. We were just saying that we need to introduce you to our friend Michael Owens, if you have not met him.
I know Michael. Michael's a friend of mine. Yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Because I think that could be a mutually advantageous connection.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm very excited for his run for Secretary of State as a cybersecurity expert. Exactly what we need with election integrity being such a fraught issue right now.
Exactly.
Especially in the Peach State, there's no question about it.
The flaming hot.
A lot of transportation.
Like.
Yeah. So tell us what inspired you. Obviously, it's a fantastic work. It got viral on Twitter and obviously has moved around all over the place. But of course, the message is what resonates. You know, we've always been talking about in the progressive movement, everything really rests with labor. And you captured it in a very good way in the sense that you could tell people that the labor movement is important, but if you incorporate music and rhythm and that type of thing, it gets people into it. It's like, oh yeah, right. That's right. Labor does matter. So kind of what inspired you to do it and what's it been like over the past couple of weeks as things have really taken off?
Yeah. So, I mean, it all kind of came out of trying to make sense of what we were experiencing in the pandemic, watching as in Georgia, the economy reopened after only a matter of weeks and all of these essential workers that now don't deserve a living wage were being sacrificed for the economy. Healthcare workers getting totally disrespected while they, you know, worked, the you know, poured their hearts out to save lives. Looking at the way that there was a massive transfer of wealth from working people to the billionaires. You know, you see people taking advantage of PPP loans. Meanwhile, their workers that work under the table for them aren't eligible for unemployment. And all these kinds of exploitation like that is where I started to sort of beef up my analysis of what the role of labor in the larger movement for collective liberation, right? And so with everything, I started processing what I was coming to see through hip hop by like sitting alone in my house during, you know, shelter in place, just writing rhymes about it. I would hear about this or that group, you know, calling for a boycott or calling for a strike or, you know, picketing. And I would like, you know, write it down. This is a way to make sense of what was going on. But I like that you kind of brought up the fact that like you put the song on, you're like, oh, yo, this is a bop. And then you kind of realize what it's about sometimes.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's a lot of why I do hip hop in the first place. Somebody might not come to a meeting at City Hall or even like hip hop that much. But like if you kind of use the aesthetics of hip hop to like lure people into learning something about the world, about the, you know, the political analyses and action we need to get everybody free, then cool. So my whole album, you know, talking about all sorts of different topics, you know, with beats that you might like want to bump on your way to work, you know, feel that subwoofer vibrating a little bit. And then as you think deeper about it, like, huh, maybe there is a need for international solidarity. Maybe the idea of prison abolition is a hopeful one rather than a scary one, all these kinds of things. And so it's been really great, particularly with this song, seeing it do exactly what I hoped it would, in that giving people might for the fight in this moment where so many folks are coming out the woodwork to organize their workplaces or learning about unionizing, not accepting the status quo anymore. So I really hope it continues to give people hope, give people, you know, verve to like keep fighting, because we're starting to get momentum that could turn into something real.
We're speaking with Mariah Parker, County Commissioner from Athens, Clark County, Georgia.
I have something very profound to say.
Okay, say it.
Ooh.
But just when I was watching that, it's not just the idea of using music to engage people into things. Like, we've been doing that for years, like in all different genres. You use music, it engages people to do it. But your video really addresses, and at the risk of sounding overwoke, and I don't really mean this, this real intersectionality between race and class. And I find that we've had guests on many times where they don't see that. They really see it as they're separate things. And I mean, both ways. Like, and I think that it's so important to recognize that there is a very big majority of people in that community that are Black. And there's a big link in that. So I was very appreciative of that on a kind of deeper level, because I think that it's important to merge.
Yo, look, they don't teach people this because they are scared that they would learn from it. But like when Martin Luther King Jr. got assassinated, he was down in the South trying to organize white and Black people to come together, the white and Black working classes to come together to march for economic freedom. And that scared them worse than all of the marching for civil rights that they had did. Like, they really, like, the powers that be really want people to, like, be fighting. This is another theme on my album. They want us to fight each other rather than fight them. And so trying to create, like, a multiracial working class sense of solidarity through the song, using hip-hop, using the old school, you know, Minor Strike, like, refrain. And then, you know, the channel, Pueblo Unido, Jamás Será Vencido, to bring in our Latino brothers and sisters. You know, I'm just trying to, like, bring everyone together rather than thinking about it solely in terms of class or solely in terms of race.
So obviously you have experienced quite a bit of attention over the past couple of weeks. Good friend of the show, awesome guy, Bo with the Fifth Column, had you on the other day, and obviously
isn't he the best?
Yo, he's such a nice dude, and it's so funny. My introduction to him had been like during the pandemic. My roommate watched him religiously, and so I recognized his voice, like, you know, emanating when I was like cooking in the kitchen. But yeah, no, he's really dope. He's real cool.
And that, of course, leads to a very important question, because, as you know, your neighbors here in, you know, just south of you in the Sunshine State have a serious problem with labor, because we are a right to work state, and building that collective solidarity, perhaps the biggest issue when Jen ran for Congress against Wasserman Schultz, is the fact that the head of our county AFL-CIO has been basically in political bed, if you will, with Debbie for the past three
decades. We're saying it figuratively.
Decades.
We're not addressing literally.
I said political. Okay. I said political.
I'm just saying.
And
just
so saying. That within itself is obviously a huge problem. How would you assess the labor movement currently in the state of Georgia?
I mean, I would say that with this like rising class consciousness in the pandemic, like more people are starting to like wake up to like, yo, like I can't take this anymore. What should I do? And turning to all these kinds of new options. So young people, especially considering the huge wage gap between like baby boomers and Gen X and like millennials and Gen Z, like folks are just not having it anymore and turning to whatever it means they can. So more people are learning about the idea of organized labor, but it is a struggle as a right to work state. I mean, we have had wins here in Athens, Georgia. The labor union on the campus of the University of Georgia allied with some anti-racist activists that were super pissed that the university had just moved like a bunch of like slave graves that were buried under an academic building, like, and didn't tell anyone. So we all came together and like, all right, what do we want them to do to address this situation? And together we actually won wage increases for the workers at the University of Georgia, 46% of whom working in, you know, non-salary jobs are Black people, and 2,000 of whom were making less than a living wage. And so, you know, we are seeing the power of organized labor in these small instances to make change. But yeah, there's still a lot of fear. There's still a lot of misinformation and not in, and lack of understanding about what your rights are with regards to labor organizing. But people are starting to wake up. People are starting to like get involved. Cause like, what else are we supposed to do? We ain't gonna sit around here and let things stay the same. So it's a hopeful moment, though also a challenging one.
Yeah, I'm thinking good for you that you use the ill-gotten gains of the capitalist system to basically benefit you in a really good position and really set up like that. It's really brilliant, actually. You know, I mean, it's really riding the horse in the direction that it's going. Mm.
So what is your, when is your next election and what is your next plan? I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of chatter about you taking the next step and whatnot. So what is your current situation and what are you maybe looking to do?
Yeah. So I just won re-election in 2020. So I, this is my second term. So I have a three years left in my second term. So we'll see what we can get done in that period of time. I had a long thought that like the guy before me had served for 25 years and like run unopposed the whole time. Yeah. And so I was like, well, it's going to take me 25 years to like fix the mess he made. But I'm increasingly starting to think that that thinking is a problem. Like think about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for example. She's been in there forever and thinks she should just stay forever because she really loves power more than she loves like actually working for the people. And people, when they get in there for a long time, they like they just think they're the only one that they're I'm the only one that's right. I'm the only one that can fix anything and cling to power for power's sake. And so I'm reevaluating whether like how long I should stay in politics. I do think getting new blood in there is super important. And rather than like stick it out and say, well, I'm right and everyone else is wrong. Maybe, you know, I got in when I was 26, maybe getting the next crop of 26-year-olds in there and like, you know, just going and doing my music thing. We'll see. But I do intend to stay engaged. You know, I come out of a background as a community organizer. At some point in my life, I will go back to that. I'm still doing it. So like, that's always going to be a part of my life, whether or not elected office continues to be.
So when I looked you up, one of the stories that came up was about you having a baby while you were like, was it while you were running or what?
No.
Like,
so no, yeah, this was last year. I got a 5-month-old asleep in the bedroom next to me.
That's crazy to me. So at what you were in like your campaign mode?
So no. So I got reelected in 2020 and then 2021 had a baby.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But that so was still, I was the first person to ever have a baby while serving elected office in my city.
Which is so strange for
I know whenever office. Someone's like, oh, that's so inspiring. I'm like, isn't that kind of sad though? Like what? Like that so we're just had, now.
Well, what it says is you've never had women of childbearing age in that position. And that's really a deficit. Like that's just a deficit. So yeah. So that's all. Yeah. It's funny that they made a big deal of it. I thought maybe it was like something like really special and I just had a baby while I was serving.
I'm just old. I'm just that age where you like have kids and stuff. I don't know. And it was really easy for folks to figure out whether or not anyone had done it before me, because before me, there'd only been like 10 like women politicians. And it's like, well, none of them had kids. So like that settles that debate. And that even was very depressing as well. But yo, I mean, whatever it takes, you know, I always say it's not being the first person. It's like ensuring the last person that has to suffer through something is remembered. So like instead of celebrating the first African-American or whatever, like who was the last Black person to ever get shot by the police? And we never have to ever say another name. Or like, who is the last queer teen that has to sleep under a bridge? And like, we remember their name because no one ever is going to have to do that again. Yeah. So trying to focus on that rather than like, I was the first. Cause I mean, we got a lot of firsts out here that are throwing our people under the bus.
Right. Oh, yes. And that, yeah. And there's somebody good challenging some. There's people good challenging people.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, you know, obviously we don't want to talk too much politics, but obviously this is a huge year. We know
especially
that this
in Georgia.
Is gonna be, yeah. This, well, that's my point.
Yeah. Okay.
And this, of course, is going to be a very red wave year, obviously. But Georgia is a state that could be one of the, you know, buck the trend states. And so where do you currently see the state of, you know, these races? Obviously, in a normal circumstance, I would say it heavily favors the GOP. However, the GOP is having its own civil war right now between Brian Kemp and David Perdue.
Yeah.
And with the, you know, the popularity, obviously, of what Stacey Abrams has done, of course, Senator Warnock is, you know, he's done a pretty solid job in his own right. And of course, Michael Owens is a friend, and you, of course, are at the real local level that can make a difference. How do you currently see the trends going as far as Georgia is concerned?
I mean, I do think we have a really unique opportunity to elect Stacey Abrams and do things like Medicaid expansion that could save thousands of lives for Georgians. And I mean, we got here because organizations like the New Georgia Project got out and registered to vote, like pretty much every single Georgian. We have like a 95% voter, like registered voter, you know, population now. Yeah. And it's mostly young people, and it's mostly people of color and stuff like that. And so I think that we can benefit from the fissures on the right, like watching David Perdue and Brian Kemp, who are running, you know, in the Republican primary for governor, duke it out. That's going to be ugly. That's not going to be a fight afterwards where everyone shakes hands and, like, you know, makes out or whatever. And then like, oh, let's support the winner. Like, no, like, the Brian Kemp people, if he loses, which it's looking increasingly like he will because Trump hates him for not overturning our election results, like he's going to just take his ball and go home, right? And so those sorts of, I mean, and that's similarly probably why Senators Warnock and Ossoff won the runoff, because Republicans were like, well, the elections are rigged. That's terrifying.
No, listen, Mariah, you don't know what you're talking about. I totally
trust
won.
Trust me.
Fair and square. I totally won. And Mr. Kemp didn't listen. He was a terrible person. And Mr. Perdue, he loves me. He knows I'm great. And he's totally
Stacey Abrams is evil communist.
Purdue chicken guy?
No, that's not true. I'm the chicken person.
Like from Seinfeld, the Purdue chicken guy?
Yeah, but that's not the guy. Okay. We're talking about the former senator who was also robbed. He should still be in the Senate. It was totally rigged, and we're going to unrig it this time. Totally going to do it.
All right. Yeah.
So that's you bring up a good point that reminds me of, like, you know, we had Senate Bill 202 that passed last year that, you know, creates an ungodly number of, like, voting-related misdemeanors to just scare people out of wanting to vote. And so we'll see if, like, our efforts at voter registration and outreach can overcome some of the voter suppression efforts that they have put in place. But if you look, for example, at the Atlanta municipal elections last year, you know, mayor and city council, turnout was up. So, like, I think people are kind of mad that their vote's trying to get taken away from them and, like, voting harder, which that's a phrase I hate, but, like, it kind of happened. So, you know, we'll see if that momentum can carry us over the line, keeping Senator Warnock in office and, you know, maybe electing the country's first Black female governor.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And here's another important question. How are you sleeping?
Yo, I've never slept well anyway, because I just like have ideas in the night, and I like got to get up and write some emails or whatever. Yeah. And so especially now, I mean, the baby's starting to sleep better, but like the combined of, like, all right, already my two breaks in the night where I get up for 45 minutes to, like, you know, catch up on the news or, like, write that email I was supposed to write last Tuesday. And then, like, half an hour later, the baby wakes up and now I got to do all that. I'm trying to write another email with one hand. It's like, it's a lot, but, like, I don't know. Sleep when I'm dead, right?
Like when people say, just sleep when the baby sleeps, as if you could just turn off your mind and sleep when your baby is sleeping, like, on command.
Yeah, what? And that worked, like, the first 3 weeks when I was, like, totally delirious and exhausted. Like, but never since, nah. Like, yeah, it's fine. It's all good.
Last thing before you go. One of the things that we've learned about the labor movement is that it's a great unifier in almost every way regarding where people stand on the political spectrum. Would you say that from your experience, even with the video, that you're getting respect and support from people even on the political right who recognize that the labor movement is critical to where we are these days? Would you say that there is sort of this, as Reverend Jackson once said, this rainbow coalition of people from all different walks of political life that recognize that it really is the 99% against the 1%. Would you say that that's pretty accurate based on what you've seen so far?
I do think so. You brought up, like, the leader of the AFL-CIO down in your county, was it? It's not cool, apparently. And so, like, even folks, like, in leadership, when they're not always, like, great, but they see the power of, you know, in terms of, like, general social progressivism, but they see the power of organized labor, like, even some of those kinds of cats, like, have come through. And I'm hoping that perhaps through having, like, a multiracial working class message, like, they might start to see, like, yo, maybe Black lives do matter or whatever. So, like, I've been very shocked by the range of political ideologies that seem to be gravitating to it. And I'm excited by that. Yeah, I'm hoping that it can be, it too, in its own way, could be a great unifier.
Yeah. No, you're awesome. And I keep thinking back to when we launched our campaign, and all I really wanted was someone who could like perform, like to come and do it. Like, no,
hey, let me know next time. Yes, let's go. Yes.
Like, yeah, no, I trust me. Every time I learn something like that, it's like mental note to self. And I'm good about it. I'll be like, you should call so-and-so. And we need to like, yeah, I'm collecting. I'm building a coalition.
Mariah Parker, County Commissioner from Athens, Clark County, Georgia. Where can people find you? How can they support your work? Anything you'd like to share before you go?
Yeah. So you can find me on like Twitter, Instagram, whatever, at Mariah F-O-R Athens. That's Mariah F-O-R Athens. You can also check out, like go pre-order my album. If you go to bit.ly/LF Bellringer, album's called Bellringer. So okay, bit.ly/LF Bellringer. And yeah, I hope I get to talk to y'all again and everybody in the chat, and like, let's all be friends and homies. Cause
yeah, you got to do that last one more time. So it's bit.ly and then
/LF Bellringer. My sage name, lingua franca, you know, no. Yeah.
Bellringer.
LFBELLRINGER.
Yeah. Like ding, 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 yeah.
Bellringer.
Mariah Parker, guys, support her work, spread the word, share that video. Remember,
yeah, it's really cool.
The future of the progressive movement lies with labor. Very happy to have you on this evening. We're sure we will be in touch.
Absolutely. Solidarity forever, y'all.
Have a great evening. So needless to say,
she was lovely. She was lovely. She was lovely and badass. And she's got this whole like, and she even has a photo that she had taken of herself standing in that sort of, you know, that same retro, like power to the people stance. And she's got like the hair and the whole thing. She's just got it going on.
She is. And she is part of that coalition that we are building that is eventually going to overtake the corporate stranglehold that we have on our country. And speaking of the corporate stranglehold that we have on our country,
now we're talking about the evil empire.
Is there a greater corporate stranglehold on our country than the military industrial?
The military industrial. We're gonna now transfer into talking about the evil empire.
Yes. And of course, we are very delighted to have for the first time and hopefully not the last time, gentleman who is part of Means TV and has done exceptional work on RT with our good friend, Tom Hartman. You know him, you love him. Sam Sachs, welcome to Generational Change.
Hey, good to be on. How are y'all doing?
Hi, good. It's nice to meet you. You know, we do like to have actual journalists on our show so that, because we don't claim to do that, right? So this is one of those things where for a while I've been wanting to talk about serious things, and we needed somebody who actually knows serious things. So I was hoping we could talk about what's going on in Ukraine, because we haven't even been able to give like an update to I don't feel like I know enough really to talk about. Like, to me, it's just a usual pissing match. We're just trying to, you know,
Well, we saw the president of Ukraine come out the other day and say,
manufacturer consent.
This is not what you think. And if we needed help, we would call for it.
Right.
And so what has been your intel as far as what you've seen so far? Because it looks like, you know, the MIC is just looking, they're itching for a reason to ramp up the war machine. And quite frankly, Sam, as I'm sure you know, being in D.C., you know, with Biden's approval rating and the entire Democratic Party basically going literally through the toilet right now, the scariest thing when that happens is the prospect of war to try to bump up the numbers. As sad and sick as that is, that seems to be the case. What's your observation in terms of where things are at right now?
Well, you know, it's not a great situation over there. Obviously, we can kind of dig more into that. But I think a critical question is, what's changed recently with the situation in Ukraine? Because this goes back to 2014, in which, I mean, we've had fighting in Ukraine, in eastern Ukraine, going back to 2014, when the Yanukovych government fell. There were protests in Kyiv. He fled to Russia, and then that installed a new government, basically, in Ukraine that wanted closer ties to Western Europe, to NATO. And Russia responded in 2014 by, we know about the annexation of Crimea, and also by sending some military assets into eastern Ukraine to what it claims to support citizens there that opposed the coup, what they described as the coup in Kyiv. And there's been sort of low-grade warfare ever since then. So what's changed? And that's been pretty much tolerable to the U.S. and most of the world for the last 8 years, the situation in eastern Ukraine. What's changed in the last few months, I guess, is the Russians have put more troops on the border. There's always been troops on the border. The quantity has changed. The Russians claim they're involved in drills and military tests and things like that, exercises and maneuvers that are supposed to last until the end of the month. We'll see what happens then. But what's wild is in response to this, the U.S. has deployed some extremely bellicose rhetoric, accusing the Russians of launching an imminent invasion, claiming an invasion was imminent, claiming that they had enough troops to take Kiev in 2 days. And we've seen the Pentagon activate 10,000 U.S. troops on war footing, including sending 3,000 to Eastern Europe, not to Ukraine, but to Eastern Europe to bolster NATO allies. Ukraine, obviously not a member of NATO, but the idea of Russian troops on the border of a country that borders NATO is enough to, I guess, activate some troops to send over to those allies. So there's the whether your thesis holds that this is, you know, in response to bad poll numbers, you know, this also came in response to the Omicron surge in which deaths were, you know, spiraling out of control last month. I mean, that's not to discount. There are legitimate concerns that what Russia is doing in eastern Ukraine, which isn't justifiable. I'm not going to defend Russia. I mean, Putin runs a conservative government over there. But the situation has been blown a bit out of proportion by the U.S. And the U.S. has actually been scolded by allies in Europe for letting the rhetoric get out of control. The foreign minister in Ukraine has said, don't buy into the doomsday talk. They're not freaking out in Ukraine. So the question is, why should Americans be freaking out? Why is the White House freaking out here?
That's a very good point. We're speaking with Sam Sachs of Means TV. You know, when we see the lack of response from corporate media, what a surprise. And then it becomes this whole left-right divide when somebody like Tucker Carlson says, we don't need to go to war there.
Yeah.
And you're not seeing others step up and say, yeah, this is really not a good idea. It just creates this unnecessary, you know, rift that has already been exacerbated in so many ways.
Isn't that the point?
Maybe so. But again, partisan politics should have nothing to do with what our foreign policy is. Unfortunately, as you know, it plays a big role. Why do you think so many people have been so silent on this?
Well, people, this is a pretty nasty political environment in which people don't want to be associated with being pro-Russia. And that goes back to Russia. Well, I mean, first off, the neocons have been playing this game for a while and have had Russia in their crosshairs for, you know, decades. So liberals got into the game, too. Liberals have always been in this game. They've always been involved in the Cold War. But they really ramped it up with the election of Donald Trump and propagating Russiagate stuff. So it's a pretty nasty political environment to speak up and say anything that might be construed as advancing Russian propaganda or at least supporting Russian interests. You did see, and I would caution some of the right wingers who have spoken out against this, people like Josh Hawley, Matt Gaetz, Tucker Carlson. They always usually couch their objections in terms of we need to keep our resources available to counter the real threat, which is China. They're usually, you know, if you don't want war with Russia because you want war with China, you're still a neocon, right? You're not taking any sort of principled anti-war stance there. But you did have Bernie Sanders, who I think has been the most forceful in speaking out for peace in the region, publish an op-ed in The Guardian this week.
It was great.
And yeah, and what was surprising about it is he didn't just speak in sort of the general platitudes that you've heard some on some members of Congress on the left speak out like we don't need war with Ukraine. We need to pursue diplomatic solutions. He actually went and spoke to what Russia's security interests are in the region, what is at the root of this conflict, which is the expansion of NATO. Yeah. We are in this situation because a Western military alliance that was formed to counter the Soviet Union, explicitly to counter the Soviet Union, has grown all the way to now include countries that border Russia. Is broken promises that were made in the 90s to Russia that it wouldn't expand east of Germany. It's expanded far east of Germany. And now there are basically two countries left that aren't in that region that aren't a part of NATO, Ukraine and Belarus. And Ukraine is it wants to be a part of, or at least some members are. You know, it's hard to figure out the polling within Ukraine on this issue. It does look like...
I was going to ask you that. Like, what do they want?
Well, I mean, it does look like a majority of the country does want to have closer ties with Europe. And, you know, that's somewhat understandable given the way that Russia has aggressively acted toward Ukraine recently. But, you know, it depends on where you are in the country. The Ukraine has very different interests. Eastern Ukraine from Western Ukraine. East of Kiev, you have people who have a lot closer ties to Russia, and that's why you've had this sustained conflict in Ukraine since 2014, is because there is actual opposition to Kiev's plans to move closer to NATO and the EU and Western Europe. So while there might be a majority, there's pretty... hardened opposition in eastern Ukraine. And there are all sorts of troubling political elements within Kiev, within the new government. In fact, you have within the security state, you have the Azov Battalion, which is a blatantly fascist white nationalist battalion that was a private or that was a kind of a private militia that was then integrated into the security forces of Ukraine. So there are people who do not agree with the direction that the current within Ukraine that don't agree with the current direction that the government, which a lot of people deem as illegitimate because it took over essentially after what some people describe as a coup. Russia claims that the U.S. was involved in this coup. You know, you did have U.S. senators walking around Maidan, handing out candy and supplies to protesters at the time. Whether that would be defined as playing a role in a coup, I'm not sure. But clearly, the U.S. was interested and pleased with the results of what happened. So, yeah, it's hard to gauge internal polling in Ukraine on this issue. Ultimately, sure, yes, a country does have a right to decide for itself what it wants to do. But the point that, getting back to Bernie Sanders' op-ed, is NATO also has to consider decisions it makes, whether or not including certain countries into its alliance undermines the alliance, creates regional instability. And that's the case with when it comes to Ukraine. It's clearly creating instability in the region. There are other countries like Finland, a advanced democracy in Europe that borders Russia that's chosen not to be a member of NATO to avoid such conflict. So if people genuinely want peace, if people genuinely want a resolution in Ukraine, the easiest way to get there is to for NATO to say, look, we're not going to seek Ukraine's membership into our military alliance. Ukraine can find resources in Western Europe. They can start minding their own, you know, energy resources and such. They can have open markets with the rest of the world and everything like that. And Russia would largely be fine with that. But if you look at the demands here, it's clearly about Ukraine joining NATO. It's about NATO weaponry being placed in Ukraine. It's about nukes being placed in the region. All seem like fairly reasonable demands. The U.S. wouldn't want a government like Mexico to be a part of an adversarial military alliance. The U.S. wouldn't want Russia putting nukes in Mexico. So if we want to not be hypocritical here, then that's the reasonable solution, is to take Ukraine admittance into NATO off the table. And that's essentially what Bernie Sanders argued for in this op-ed, which is a pretty brave position to take in U.S. politics these days.
If only he were our president. Oh, we're speaking with Sam Sachs of Means TV. You know, you transitioned into a very important part of this story, which of course is China, which is they are the global superpower. And the reason that they are so much more part of this issue in terms of foreign policy than Russia is because so much of our economy is dependent on China, especially, importing, exporting, manufacturing and whatnot. And one thing, if we're going to go into what I think a lot of people can identify with is the whole pop culture issue is, you know, Leslie Jones was commenting, on the Olympics the other day, and a lot of people got a kick out of what she was doing. And then the next thing you know, NBC tells her to knock it off. And the only thing I can think of is China told NBC to tell her to knock it off.
Of course.
And this is this is NAFTA and normal trade relations with China coming home to roost. You see it with professional athletes, particularly LeBron James, who is very hypocritical when it comes to issues like labor, but won't say anything regarding the labor practices of China. How do you see our role evolving with China?
Near peers. They're near peers is what I've been taught by Bo. They're near peers.
I'm not sure I see it the same way in terms of NBC. I'm not really too familiar with what Leslie Jones was tweeting in that whole story there. I have caught some of NBC's coverage of the Olympics and don't think that the network is at all concerned about pissing China off. It does seem like, especially during the opening ceremony, like the CIA was writing a lot of NBC's like commentary when it comes to how much focus was being placed on alleged human rights abuses and just sort of the Chinese government's totalitarian control of the games and public image and athletes. So I do think though that there is an interesting dynamic when it comes to like U.S. government and the U.S. security state and their fear mongering over China versus capitalists' interests in the U.S. that see business ties in China and don't engage in as much sort of fear-mongering rhetoric when it comes. You won't hear the heads of major companies talk about the Communist Party of China like you hear a lot of members of the U.S. government discuss it. So, it's hard to say what really was motivating NBC's decision there. I mean, when it comes to China, it's an interesting, like, it's not a communist state. It's, but it is a state that, is engaged in central planning. It, is looking at things in the long term. It has, it is not letting, profit accumulation and capitalists dictate what is going to happen in their economy. Yes, they do have influence. And yes, there's a lot of foreign investment flowing into China every year. What should leftists, anti-capitalists, socialists in the U.S. think of China? It's a complicated question. I don't really have that answer. I made a tweet that kind of was a little bit controversial with some people a few days ago that said, like, no matter what standard you choose, the U.S. should be considered a more controversial host of the Olympics than China.
Even if
you want to take the allegations that China is does have internment camps that they're detaining Uyghurs in, that's awful. That's a human rights abuse. It should be condemned. The U.S. has a higher prison population than any other country in the world. What ICE is doing on the southern border is a moral travesty. People point to Chinese surveillance. I mean, we know about the Snowden revelations from 8 years ago. We know about the U.S. surveillance state. I don't think China is involved in many imperial wars around the world that the U.S. is involved in. The U.S. is engaged in starving millions of people in Afghanistan by withholding financial assistance. So, like, I'm not sure. I have trouble getting worked up about Chinese human rights abuses and the Chinese menace when I live here in the United States that's committing more human rights abuses both within our borders and outside our borders than any country that's ever existed, really.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because one of the things that bothers me infinitely more about any sort of human rights abuses from China is the human rights violations of our companies that set up in China so that they can commit those human rights violations and like eye slaves and the such that, so it's like, okay, we can criticize them, but we have no problem letting our, you know, oligarchs make all their money from over there. Like it's just, the hypocrisy is suffocating. That's how it feels to me. And I generally, when somebody would say negative things about China or Russia or anywhere that we have a problem with, Venezuela, Iran, anywhere, to me, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, they just don't want to play with us. And so we don't like them.
Hence why you've got China and Russia now formulating an agreement on that pipeline for the next, I guess, 30 years.
They don't want to play in our sandbox. And I don't blame them. And so once people decide, I think a lot of it has to do with the petrodollar. You know, I mean, and them like having everybody on our currency, everybody has to be beholden to us somehow. And I think when countries don't want to play ball, then they just, then they're our problem and we have to have regime change.
Yeah. The way I look at this is, you know, less about individual countries and more about the enemy is global capital. The enemy are these transnational capitalists who can, who are looking for new markets to exploit cheap labor to accumulate more profit. And there aren't many governments around the world that have really taken on this force and looked out for their own citizens. I mean, you can Cuba, you know, there really aren't that many. At times, you know, I mean, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. Current day Russia doesn't even come close to trying to really do much about global capital. There are steps that China takes, but as you said, you know, China allows a lot of foreign investment in the country and a lot of its workers to be exploited by Western capitalists. So it's, you know, there are no good guys here, right? There are no good guys here. And that's why I, you know, when the U.S. tries to paint Russia or China as bad guys, that's mostly a distraction to me. That's,
yeah,
you know,
there are no good guys. There are no good guys.
It's hard to get really jazzed up about going to war with Russia. I mean, how does that benefit the U.S. working class in any way whatsoever? It doesn't.
It's just money for the MIC. I mean, it just keeps the wheels turning. That's the only thing we produce anymore, seemingly, is like, you know, weapons of mass destruction seems to be our specialty. And so they have to keep selling it.
And the war profiteers in the U.S. that live in the mansions just across the river here from me, who, you know, they've been built by trillions of dollars in defense contracts and over the last 20 years as part of the so-called global war on terror. They're open about this. They are on calls. Sarah Lazar over at In These Times has been documenting this stuff, these investment calls that the heads of Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are making, in which they point to these conflicts around the world and explicitly say that this is good for business. So, you know, I've had people in Ukraine who consider themselves leftists, and I don't doubt that they are leftists, who are mad at me for opposing any U.S. military involvement in Ukraine, opposing weapons shipments to Ukraine. And I can sympathize with their condition. They're genuinely concerned that Russia might invade them. That seems like a hellacious scenario that I'm not at all confronting. So I certainly understand that we're coming from different viewpoints here, but they have to understand that the U.S. does not have their best interests at heart here at all. The U.S. is interested in antagonizing Russia, a project it's long been a part of, and the U.S. is interested in enriching its war profiteers at home. And that is what's driving all this right now. So it's a tough situation. It's a very difficult situation. You know, I don't want to say up tough luck guys, you know, as they're staring down an invasion. I also, you know, am not really sure that I don't really think like, what are the odds that Russia is going to invade? If you're paying attention to US media, you would think it'd be like 90%. Like it's about to happen, but I don't think that Vladimir Putin is suicidal. I don't think he would, you know, we've seen the Pentagon point to these assessments that he's got enough troops on the border to take Kiev in 2 days. Okay, well, how is he going to hold it? He doesn't have the resources to hold Kiev. Ukraine is a pretty big country with a lot of people that would put up sustained resistance, as the U.S. is finding out in Iraq, as the Soviet Union found out in Afghanistan. This is not a war that Vladimir Putin intends to fight at all. I mean, maybe I'm completely missing this situation, but I'd put the odds extremely low that Putin actually goes beyond what he's already been doing in eastern Ukraine and launches some sort of full frontal assault all the way to Ukraine's capital. I don't see that happening at all.
I feel like we're in Groundhog Day is what I feel like. And how do people not see that we're just doing the same thing over and over and over again? Like, isn't like past, like, can't we look at history as to what's most likely to happen? I feel like this is an Occam's razor scenario. You know, I mean, are the Russians like coming up on the shores in boats? Are they trying to take us down? Do they want, like, they have 8 military bases. We have like, what, close to 1,000, like, What are we so concerned about? They're not even communist anymore. Not that that would have been a thing anyway, but like, what is the deal? Like, it's like, we're afraid of being afraid. There's no there.
But that's politics.
There's no there there.
Politics of fear always works. It always has. And that's what they're going to keep doing. As long as it works, as long as you can literally get people to shit their pants, that's always the goal, because it gets people to react, gets people to spend money, gets people to not question why we're giving $1 trillion a year to the military. You know, there's a reason why we are never talking about the fact that our troops are horrifically treated, especially after they leave the military. We don't talk about the fact that it's got to be in, I don't remember the exact number. I think it's between 70 and 80% of the money that goes to the military goes to military contractors. It doesn't actually go where it belongs. It doesn't go to actual benefits for people who do serve our country. No. There is this, it's like this one giant bubble, Sam. It feels like with our economy that this is why they push so hard against, you know, something like universal health care, because they know all these things are interconnected. It's like if one thing falls, the whole thing falls. Do you kind of see it in the same light, in the sense that all of these major titans of industry are all interconnected, and that's why our system is failing so much? It's also why the support for this is not being ginned up the way it was, as I can remember, even being in college and seeing people be like, oh, we have to go to Iraq because we have to bring freedom. It's like, it's not like that now. I think that there's really been a changing of the guard of sorts. How do you see that as we wind down the conversation?
I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe there's been a changing of the guards, or maybe just this isn't a very compelling case for war here to be made. Like, people generally don't seem to care. Like, the prospect of the George W. Bush folks really sold that Iraq war. They really brought like the imagery of mushroom clouds over New York City, anthrax, everything you could imagine. People generally just don't care about what's happening in Ukraine. I mean, maybe you could get them to care a little bit more because of Russiagate stuff that's been happening in this country. But nope.
They're grasping at straws.
Nobody wants to die in the Donbass fighting for Ukrainian independence or something. And I don't think that the administration, first off, the administration has been all over the place. I mean, they started off with the really heated rhetoric, invasion's imminent. And then Ukraine's like, knock that off. It's not really that imminent. And now you kind of see them softening it a little bit. Like, we don't know what Putin's going to do yet. We're watching the situation. We're still hoping for diplomacy. So, you know, I'm not sure what they're trying to do with it now. It seems like whatever case they tried to make has failed now. And so they're just trying to see this out. But the main takeaway for me is, like, Russia is in a position of weakness here. Like, Russia is not some sort of menace that we need to be fearing. Russia is surrounded by NATO countries and allies of the United States. Like, them seizing Crimea 8 years ago was an act of desperation, clinging to like whatever they can still cling to as they're seeing, you know, their interests get lost one by one. So it's hard to fear that. It's hard to be afraid of that. And like I said, I don't think Putin is suicidal, and I don't think he's going to do something all that nuts. I mean, at least not as crazy as invading Iraq or Afghanistan. Like
who would do that?
Right.
Well, when CNN keeps hiring people that are massive neocons to try to gin up support for God knows what.
No, they have to bang their war drum. They have to. They've got nothing better to do.
The wild thing is CNN sent reporters to Ukraine, right? I'm not sure if you saw this report last week. They sent a reporter to Eastern Ukraine, to these cities that are right across the border from Russia, that are staring down Russian troops and tanks. And the reporter is going around to the market asking people, and nobody thinks war is about to happen. Nobody is concerned about war. And yes, these people have been living in a sort of low-grade war environment for 8 years, so maybe it just doesn't affect them. But you have people who are explicitly saying, no, that's just stuff that Joe Biden is saying. That's not happening here. Wow. So like, when you've lost CNN in this effort to sort of gin up a cause for war, you're really screwing it up here. And that's the Biden
administration. I have a question for you, Sam. So back in the days of weapons of mass destruction, we're probably talking like circa 2002, 2000, whenever that was, right? I never believed it. I was law clerking at a time, and I remember having this very specific conversation with my judge. I'm like, I don't believe it. I think it's like, I really never bought it. And so how did you buy it then? Did you ever buy it? No, okay.
No. And I remember arguing with my friends in high school about it and them saying this would be over very, very quickly, and me telling them no. And they're friends that I still have, that I still remind them of as often as I can about that.
Yeah, I always knew it was silly. I always knew that. I always figured that is just, I never knew the term. I didn't know manufacturing consent at the time, but I always knew the concept of what they were doing.
Well, what's wild is you have people who are today coming out and pretending like everyone believed it, like there weren't mass protests against the war at the time, because there were mass protests against the war. There were a lot of people opposed to the war. There were a lot of people who didn't trust George W. Bush, who still hated George W. Bush.
Still do.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah.
But Sam, isn't it time, like Joy Behar says, to just get over the Iraq
war? Let's rehabilitate him. Yeah. He's cute. He shares candy with Michelle Obama. He's the guy you want to drink a beer with. Just get over the fact that he's a war criminal. People, move on with
your life. Can't we all just get along?
Just seriously,
and pretend like we're not a war-driven economy.
Just wait 10 years. We're going to hear the same thing about Donald Trump.
Well, listen, I think we're going to get another shot in 24 with a progressive movement. We'll see what happens. A couple of names have been floated, Marianne Williamson, Nina Turner, and Joe Sandberg. But right now, I think it's somewhat promising that we are living in a time where people are looking at this, what should be a substantial story regarding, you know, the fact that we're trying to gin up war again in this country. And most people looking at it saying, no, this is BS. And we know it is. And we really have to have a much greater conversation going forward about how much money we spend on our military every year, as we know most of it is not necessary. So
I think it's important to point out that the Democrats do go out of their way to give them even more money than they asked for. So I think we all need to maintain perspective that this isn't a tribal thing. This is a capitalist.
Hey, if you want bipartisanship, just look at the military.
Right. When it comes to communist,
all right, bring it on.
When it comes to maintaining U.S. empire, it is a bipartisan endeavor, always has been. And, you know, while the case to go to war in Ukraine people might not be buying it, as you've pointed out, we're going to be entering some really dangerous territory over the next couple years and decades as China's economic influence grows and its security capabilities increase. You're going to have a lot of people here in the U.S. who will be beating that drum to war with China, which would be just a horrific, cataclysmic event.
That's it. That's the end.
That is the end.
That's the end.
Oh, but don't worry, Sam. They're all going to line up for service duty. Trust me. They really believe in the cause for sure.
You know what? When Congress decides that they want to go to war, I think that it should be their children and grandchildren that go first. And when we do it that way, then we'll talk.
That was one of Michael Moore's best work. Fahrenheit 9/11 was absolutely fantastic. And he really called out the hypocrisy in a way that needed to be done. And of course, as we know, this is the most dangerous territory in the progressive movement, is challenging the military might of our country. But it must be done. Sam, what are you working on? Where can people find your work? Get involved. We'd love to have you back again.
Where could people get actual journalist information?
Sam? Very important.
Thanks for the chance. Well, I do a morning show every Tuesday through Friday on Means TV. It's a worker-owned anti-capitalist streaming platform that has a lot of original content, shows, and radical documentaries. It's means.tv. You can subscribe. It's $10 a month. But if you can't afford it, you can pay whatever you can afford. We'll work out a deal with you on how to do that. All that information is on the website, means.tv. The show is called Means Morning News. You can probably find clips of it on Twitter every morning. And I also do a podcast with my co-host, Sam Knight, called District Sentinel Radio. It's a weekly rundown of the news coming out of Congress and the courts and the federal agencies. That comes out every Saturday morning on all your podcasting platforms. And you can support us at Patreon, patreon.com/districtsentinel.
I'm going to have to just go and add all those things because the news sources are slim pickings. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You cannot turn on your TV and find news. So you have to really go out of your way.
And especially to get honest news in our nation's capital is not an easy thing to do. So.
Well, I'm extremely excited about the Means TV project. It's no advertisers, no corporate investments, no billionaires secretly backing us. It's all funded by the viewers and by our subscribers. The decisions that are made at the co-op are made by a committee of the workers that are there and the people who've contributed to the streaming platform. And we're generating new movies and documentaries every week. So people should check it out.
Good friend of the show, Mike Figueredo of the Humanist Report, is also part of me.
Yes.
Can't say enough good work about him.
Jordan
can't say
consider
enough.
Consider participating in that.
Well,
our
maybe
friend
he
Jordan
will.
Needs to.
Our friend Jordan Chariton of Status Quo, he's trying to figure out where his next move is. And I think there needs to be like this, independent journalistic co-op of sorts.
Yes.
It's really the only way, because everybody needs to cross network. It's the only way to beat the algorithm if you're going to have enough people ultimately letting everybody else know about their work.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you're doing, Sam, is obviously very important. We're very grateful that you came on this evening, and we hope to chat with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. Nice meeting you.
Yes.
Bye.
You too, brother. Bye-bye. Thank you.
I feel like I got a really good civics lesson about the Ukraine. It was awesome. It was like, it could have been like, I don't like to ask people to do like Ukraine for Dummies, but that's kind of what I'm hoping. And he explained it in a very, very like.
Well, and again, and I think it's also very important to point out that we're living in a time right now where it goes without saying that the narrative amongst working people is like, oh no, this is stupid. We don't need war with Russia.
I hope this is crazy. Because me, from what he was saying, which is what I suspected, is it's a combination of manufacturing consent meets Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
By the way, people, if you have not
great
seen
movie.
Wag the Dog,
Jen
I
had
made
a,
you watch
Jen,
it.
Jen took like a year to get me to watch
it. I kept
it.
Being annoyed and be like, I'm not going to look at anything you tell me to look at unless you watch Wag the Dog. That's what I think about a lot of this stuff is it's very Wag the Dog. So do you want to do news and amuse or story time?
I think we should do news and amuse and finish with story time. That's always the best way to
we'll
do
it. We'll have a nighttime story, bedtime story.
So, guys, we have a number of very important stories going on right now. So,
since we covered Ukraine, that's why I didn't include that story.
But I do think that this one is very important. Can I move this anywhere? This has to stay.
No.
Right,
what are you trying to move? You can get us out of it or move. I don't. Yeah, you can move us.
Okay.
Just remember-
Oh, so we have to be in the stream. Oh, sorry. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for pointing that
out. Thanks for pointing that out. That's sad.
Didn't realize that.
No, then our best option would make you happy to do this.
No.
That.
That's better.
There.
That makes sense.
Okay. So, we're going to talk Madison Cawthorn.
Yeah. So as it turns out, there aren't a lot of things that people can do in terms of, you know, the representatives, you know, the constituents of representatives. But North Carolina Elections Board says it has power to disqualify Representative Cawthorn from running over January 6th. That's very interesting.
Now, whether or not they assert that right is another story.
But as we talk about, you know, for those who know anything about Western North Carolina, it is a very conservative part of the state, but it's also a part of the state that has one of the most progressive bastions you'll ever see, which of course is Asheville. And Representative Cawthorn represents that city. It really doesn't make any sense because they're so diametrically opposed in terms of how they see governance. And of course, in the case of Cawthorn.
It's very interesting, this story, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So the bipartisan election board made the assertion in the court filing in a case that he brought against the board, hoping to shut down this constitutional challenge to his candidacy. So they made a constitutional challenge, and now he's suing them for making that. So liberal activists filed the challenge to his candidacy last month. Their argument revolves around the little used disqualification clause of the U.S. Constitution, which was ratified after the Civil War to prevent Confederate officials and those who supported the insurrection from returning to office. So they could potentially keep him from running again on a little old clause from the Civil War. But you know what I would say? People like Madison Cawthorn are people that want us to go back to those glory days and relive the time. So
they're not serving.
Enjoy the law. You know, you want those old laws. You want to go back to the old, good old days. Well, now this is the law.
Traitors
don't get to run for office.
And listen, I hate to say it, and this isn't in any way, shape, or form to be critical of people who have disability, but there is something to be said for a man like Cawthorn who is in a wheelchair and I think harbors a lot of resentment at the world. And there is this notion that because of a person like that is in power, that they really want to wield it. They really want to show
it. I hate that you make comments like that. I don't agree with these things. I think it's like a generalization based on somebody being disabled. I think he's just a douchebag.
I didn't say that. I'm saying that there are certain people that get into positions of power that will do that.
Yes, but it has nothing to do with being in a wheelchair.
I think that in his case, that's maybe part of where his resentment comes from.
I don't know. That's you're not his therapist.
I'm not.
I can't speak as to that. But he is denying any wrongdoing. He's denying any association with the January 6th insurrection. But the liberals are really trying to use this old clause to get him his reelection nullified.
Yeah.
So, which would be really kind of cool, actually.
It would actually, because it actually is about the law. And the one thing that a lot of the hardcore conservatives harbor on is this idea of following the Constitution to a T, which is what they want the Supreme Court to do. Well, in this case, let's follow the Constitution to a T. And it looks like this might actually be a reckoning of sorts for people who really think they can get away with any type of crazy political rhetoric like Cawthorn does.
Well, it's basically traitors can't run for re-election. And by the way, I would suggest that Congress, if they really want to stop Trump, that they somehow figure out a way to keep people that have been impeached from running again.
Yeah.
It can be done. So anyway.
Yeah. There's no question that that's what we're looking at right now. But we're looking at something even more devastating, of course. And that is a third of Americans are already facing above average warming. This is a very serious problem because, again, we are not taking the climate. We're not taking climate crisis because that's what it is. It's a climate crisis. As seriously as we should. This is a very serious problem. And as The Guardian points out, Jen,
What are you kicking around, dude?
Well, there's too much stuff over here.
No, just you're kicking things around.
So?
Oh, you want me to talk about this?
If you'd like to.
More than a third of Americans are currently experiencing rapid above average rates of temperature increase, with 499 counties already breaching I'll say 2.7 Fahrenheit because we're across the pond of heating. But the U.S. as a whole has heated up over the past century due to the release of planet warming gases from burning fossil fuels. And swaths of the U.S. West, Northeast, and Upper Midwest, representing more than 124.6 million people, have recorded soaring increases since federal government temperature records in 1895. However, it is splotchy. It is not even, it is not all across. This is why you see these horrible winter storms and these blizzards, even though we're having these rapid temperatures. The things are unrelated. This is the difference between climate and weather. Correct. So, right, which we need to, it is doing so unevenly. Hot spots of extreme warming have emerged in many of America's largest cities and places as diverse as California's balmy coast and shocking.
Basically,
it's a map. It's a map of all the overpopulated blue cities that are the reddest as far as temperature increase. And then you've got the places that are along where they probably have a lot of like fuel being mined and pipelines and stuff like that, because that's certainly not from overpopulation.
No, definitely.
So a lot of that is for other reasons. But yes, that's basically what it looks like.
It's basically telling you that the best places to live are in the South and in the heartland. Very interesting.
Where we're not overpopulated. Correct. It's all about overpopulation. But anyway, so this is going on, people.
Where it's not so bad. But again, you know,
counties with the largest increase, majority California,
Ventura County, California, very, very populated.
Wait, no, largest modern increases. Okay. So largest modern increases are basically Alaska.
Alaska's getting destroyed.
Alaska is the, but it, traditionally it's always been increases, pre-industrial
Alaska
increases.
Has seven of the top 10 in the country.
It's not good.
That's, yeah.
And it isn't from overpopulation.
Yeah. You want to talk about
that's from,
ice melting. You want to talk about flooding. Again, the, Matt, I don't know if I would agree with that, but again, we have runaway capitalism. We have unregulated capitalism. Oh, we do not have a hybrid system where there's actual penalties. And the reason I bring that up is because Italy, which has a hybrid economic system, makes protecting the environment part of their constitution. See, that's important. Whereas here, we don't prioritize it. We claim like we do. I'm reading a very interesting book right now called Woke Inc., which basically talks about the fact that these corporations only have to appear to be supporting climate justice. And in reality, they're doing no such thing. In fact, it's even worse because you're kind of taking your eye off the ball. But if Italy is making protecting their environment part of their constitution, I'd say that's a pretty big deal.
I think it's very cool. The Italian parliament approved a law on Tuesday making protection of the environment part of the constitution. In a vote, politicians and activists hailed as significant for the country's future. They actually care. So the law says the state must not, you know, that's like must. It's not should, right? It's must safeguard the environment, biodiversity, and the ecosystem in the interest too of future generations. They actually put that in their constitution.
Yeah. And that's big. And again, Italy, unfortunately, is not that big. So their reach is not what the U.S. is, what China is, what India is, what Russia is, where those changes really need to happen. And
so this is what finally, environment protection has become a fundamental principle of the Republic, which future legislation must be inspired by and past legislation adapted to. Italian WWF President Donatella Bianchi said. Very excited.
And so
go Italy. See how we're red and they're green.
Yeah.
And then this is a story that just bothered me. And it's one of those things that I would have normally never heard about. And for some reason it came across my page and I wanted to like talk about this because we're always talking about how we treat immigrants in this country. Like our immigration policies are less than stellar and
sure.
We have much all less. These border issues and we're, you know, it's horrible. And the UK, this is very disappointing to me. But basically, I'm gonna explain what this story is about. It's a long story, but essentially, the test that the people take to get citizenship to be able to stay in the UK, they have a test that they have to take. And essentially, there has been a study that now shows that thousands of them were falsely graded and made in a way so that all those people got deported.
Yeah.
And so it's technical, but what it sounds like to me is similar to how we have contracts with companies that provide for our standardized testing and DIBOL for our voting machines. And this is one of those things. And this company was used, in a way to over deport. And now there's lawsuits, against for human rights violations as people were kicked out of their homes, basically. And I find this very, yeah. So the crackdown was sparked by a 2014 BBC investigation that revealed two London test centers were running fraudulent exams so people could falsely obtain a pass they could use to apply for a visa. So they were selling them basically. Like they were basically selling visas without the test being taken. So then they were accused of cheating in that way. And then they cracked down in the other direction. And now you had where they were just deporting people and they were mistakenly giving them the wrong grade on their test.
Shocking.
So yeah, that's what's been going on there. And they were just, their visas were just getting automatically canceled based on failing this exam. And they were just getting deported and it was completely inaccurate.
So it isn't just an American problem.
No, that's sort of what I was getting at with this. It's not just an American
problem.
And
speaking of the global catastrophe that keeps happening, remember, put power in the hands of so few people that can control so very, very much. We've got one final thing this evening. Put down the crack pipe, will you?
I can't. You're going into story time. It's a bedtime story, people.
So our favorite people, as you know, the South Park crew, as it looks like.
So
there's something about that beanie on Bezos' head.
And this is about Bezos, or who I think of as Lord Farquaad himself. But so we will be reading an excerpt this evening from the Oligarch Chronicles, Tales of Emasculated Men Vying to Destroy the World. Don't do it in a weird British voice, okay? Just do it in your good radio voice.
Once upon a time, there was a very little man. His inadequacy caused him to try to own the world. He abused his workers, failed to pay taxes, and became the richest man on earth. But even that wasn't enough for the little man. He needed the world's hugest boat. When his oversized boat could not fit through the village gate, the little man simply dismantled the 100-year-old gate. He could not care less that the townspeople thought him a twat. The townspeople are planning an egging insurgency against the little man's boat. He's not going to... The end.
You always forget to say the end. Okay, so if you can't see the graphic, I really do think of him as Lord Farquaad, which you've never seen Shrek, so you don't understand.
But I do understand.
But no, he's riding on a horse with fake legs, and when he gets off the horse, his helpers have to help him out of his fake legs, and then when he stands
he's
down,
such a short,
he's like,
little man.
Oh, he's such a little man. And it's John Lithgow was the voice, by the way, of
yes.
Lord Farquaad. But
you
yes.
know who was supposed to be the original voice of Shrek, right?
Before Michael Myers?
Uh-huh.
Who was it?
Mike Myers, not Michael
Whatever, Mike Myers, whatever.
Supposed to be Chris Farley.
Oh, really?
That was actually his last thing before he passed. They actually had, he was doing...
Mike Myers was great, though, as Shrek.
Anyways, but he was
you never saw it. You don't get to comment on it. The fact that you've never seen it is kind
yeah,
of
but
pathetic.
At least I knew that.
Graham and I actually watched it in the hospital when we were there, when he was doing, had his procedure. We watched it because... There was, when you're at a children's place, all there is like, there weren't any really good options. And he said he never saw it, which is weird. He never saw Shrek. Well, he was born long after the movie was ever in the theater, but.
So if you guys want to be a little entertained before we go.
Oh God.
Jen got this in the mail.
Don't show my address.
Oh like, yeah.
Hold my address up to the universe.
So Jen got this in the mail, as you guys can see.
You can see who it's from. That's the important thing.
I don't
thing.
Know, because the screen's blurry.
All right. It's from Charles Schumer, Esquire.
Because it's not Chuck Schumer. It's
Charles Schumer. Charles Schumer.
That wants
Schumer
to give you an
letter.
Idea of just how serious this is. So this is very serious. Very serious.
It's very serious with pre-sorted post-it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because I want
Oh, and an envelope. They're sending me an envelope. Yeah, Charles, I'm going to send you some money. I'm going to send you some of our money, Charles.
Make voting fair again.
Oh my God. They cannot even come up with their own slogans. They are now literally copying Trump.
They're totally copying.
They him. Are. That is so pathetic. This is what I was sent to from Chuck Schumer. Make voting fair again. Oh my God. Oh, Chuck. You are old. It is time to retire. Back to the stable. This is why these people have got to move on. See, she's like, we literally have your address now. This is what I'm saying. Although the truth is, it's probably not that hard to find it anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like true. I live a secret life, you know? Not, I exist.
So he couldn't even address you by your real name.
No.
Dear fellow American.
Fellow American.
If Republicans take the Senate majority, Mitch McConnell will drag process to a halt. You mean like the current Democrats are doing?
I was going to say, like, because it's moving so swiftly right now.
COVID relief, infrastructure funding, clean energy. Forget it. Senator McConnell has said he won't even allow President Biden to make nominations to the Supreme Court, even though they could make the nomination right now.
And how about them fast-tracking all of Trump's nominations and not even putting up a little bit of a fight? What were you doing then, Charlie?
You may have already considered this, but the reality is even scarier. If Democrats don't hold the Senate this year, democracy itself could collapse. Ooh, scary. I know that sounds like hyperbole. I wish it was. But we simply can't afford to hide from the threat we face. We can't bury our heads in the sand to pretend this is politics as usual. Not when Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, and the entire Republican Party are openly planning to overthrow our democracy and install a hard right government the American people didn't vote for.
Don't read this whole thing.
I'm writing because we need to take immediate action to secure, in capitals, our majority. Stop the Republican takeover and save our democracy.
That's the problem.
Please send your contribution right here to your Help Senate Majority PAC to fight back right now.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Please consider these three facts. Fact one, Republican Party no longer believes in democracy. January 6th was no fluke. It was a dry run for what's coming. Fact two, if they take the Senate in 22, they'll steal the White House in 24. And that's exactly what they're planning to do.
But this is better. They even show us who we should be scared of. These four guys are running to get in the Senate. That we should be so scared of them.
And I'm sure they're scary. I have no doubt they are.
Herschel Walker?
Yeah, Herschel Walker. Another Trump acolyte.
Like the athlete Herschel Walker? Mm-hmm,
that guy. Fact three, if their scheme succeeds, we won't be able to undo the damages for generations. Once they seize back power, Trump and Senator McConnell will continue to pervert our institutions in ways that will resonate for decades. So,
all right,
Chucky the Shoom.
But does this not even address the fact that Mitch McConnell just specifically spoke out against the people that were basically saying that the January 6th hearing shouldn't happen? Like, he was actually coming down on the correct side of this. So why is this sort of insinuating that Mitch McConnell and Trump were creating an insurrection?
Because the problem is that they do not want to talk about any issues that will actually benefit working people.
And let me say, I do loathe Mitch McConnell.
Of course. So
disgusting.
So, of course.
But he was not participating in an insurrection and he wasn't siding with Trump.
Needless to say, this is a bunch of crap. It doesn't actually address the fact that our current president has the power to seep through this nonsense within the legislative branch about what we can and can't get done. President Biden can cancel student debt. President Biden can expand Medicare to everyone because it is a national health crisis. And it is. He also has the power to decriminalize cannabis. He can decriminalize all drugs and expunge all nonviolent drug offender records.
Yes. You know that there's, and here's the thing, there's a number. There are 2,700 people in federal prison for nonviolent marijuana drug offenses. 2,700 people. That's 2,700 fathers, brothers, sisters, you know, somebody's family. And that's 2,700 families that are being impacted by this that he could fix now. So as far as I'm concerned, that's a failure on his part. So I'm just saying, I mean, that's the truth. He can't do anything as far as the state people other than decriminalize, but 2,700 people could have their lives back if he just chose that. I don't know how certain people can sleep at night knowing that you can do that and then you don't do it. It's really fascinating. It's psychopathic. This is when I start getting into these people are all like dark triad people, because how can you sleep at night? Like if you're someone like Jeff Bezos and you know that you could house everybody in this country and end world hunger, and yet you choose to not do so. How do you, I just do not understand how anybody can reconcile this unless you're a psychopath.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a big part of the problem. The consolidation of power has reached such levels that it's really just a question of not if, but when the system breaks, because people are, they've had enough. You see the labor movement growing every day. You see these right-wing militias growing every day. The system is literally on its axis right now, and it's going to topple over at some point. And you've got a president right now who is basically unfit for the job. He's not doing anything. He's not even trying to use the bully pulpit and always making excuses for why we can't do anything.
Parliamentarian, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema. It's never him. But yet we should all be so scared of somebody like Trump getting in office because the president is so powerful. But if the president is so powerful that we're so scared of what they could do, then why is nobody riding Joe for what he could be doing? Exactly. This is the sort of irony of it all.
And this is why it is sort of this great awakening, because people are onto this scheme now. They know what's going on. They know that they're entitled, yes, entitled to living a decent life.
Yeah.
There are principles within our economy that have yet to be tapped into, whether it is modern monetary theory, whether it is a universal basic income, which is a Social Security expansion to everybody. These things can be done. They should be done.
And they're not done by design.
Correct. So when they are complaining, when we are getting letters in the mail telling us that you better vote for the Democrats because the Republicans are going to destroy everything.
We need to keep our majority because they'll stop us from doing anything. What is it you're doing, Chuck?
Nothing. You're doing nothing. In fact, you're doing less than nothing. And as we say, the wake-up call was not Trump. The wake-up call was Biden, because what Biden is showing to everybody is why Trump got elected in the first place. And no, it wasn't Russia. Sorry.
God. You know what it really is? I think that there's this inherent thing that people cannot ever wrap their head around, the fact that their team is not the good team. Like, there is this, like, you cannot inherit, it's very difficult. It's like this very cognitive dissonant thing to accept that you are not the good guys.
It is a much bigger problem with the Democrats than with the Republicans. And one would say, well, how do you know that for sure? Statistics bear out that Democratic voters overwhelmingly, like at 75%, trust corporate media. That is very disturbing.
That's horrifying.
So even people who watch,
we all know who they are, yeah, too. We see you. We do. We know who you are.
Yeah. My mother and my late grandmother, I hate to say it.
And no, and depending on what somebody's talking points are, I actually can know whether they're watching whatever news they're watching. Like, I can tell, MSNBC. That's so unfortunate.
Yeah, when you know that their talking points are coming directly from television. And again, it really just speaks to the fact that you do have this this urban upper class that dominates the Democratic Party. And it is a very big problem. It is a very big problem. And trying to change that dynamic is going to take some time. But the good news is, as you guys probably saw, if you haven't seen, John Dougherty, good to see you. Check out our interview earlier this evening with Mariah Parker. That'll give you
I loved her. Yeah, she was so great.
And that'll give you a good idea of where a lot of these things are going in regards to our politics.
She's a very good energy about her, which I says to me, and for anybody, if you've had children, to be 5 months postpartum and be in, like, have that good of an energy, it's like, you go, man. Kudos to you. I think I was wearing pajamas and, like, moping around the house. Now I'm wearing pajamas. I'm just not moping around the house.
Fair enough. So on Monday,
we
are going to have a gerrymandering conversation.
Yes. We're basically having an emergency show.
Very much so. Friend of the show and great progressive candidate, Melanie DiRigo, is running in New York's 3rd Congressional District. Unfortunately, members of the progressive movement are kind of attempting to sandbag her right now. And that's not good.
No. So we're basically calling an emergency meeting.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to have two members of the Long Island activists are going to be joining. One, of course, is friend of the show, Robert Buonaspina. And he is also bringing on Joe Sackman. He can address the Invest in Our New York efforts. That is going to be a great conversation.
Yeah, and we're going to give as much love and support as we can for Melanie, because this is an outrage to me. And anybody who is in the progressive movement that's a candidate or a recently elected congressperson that is not supporting her and not having her back, given all the variables that we all know, shame on you. Seriously, shame on you. It's not like she wouldn't be great at it. It's not like she's not a good candidate. It's not like she didn't do well before. She's been busting her ass.
There is
there
really is no loyalty in the progressive movement. There really isn't.
We're bringing that back.
And that's the big difference with the GOP. Because if there's one, and again, this all gets back to the fact that all of the military. And I'm not talking about the military industrial complex. I'm talking about people who serve our country. They're almost universally on the right. And why? Because if there's one thing about the GOP, they are loyal to each other. They are. People on the left are not loyal.
All you have to do is look at someone like Ted Cruz and sustained as long as he has. That's some sort of freaking tribal.
Could you
loyalty?
Imagine a guy like that on the left? Forget it. He would have been dead man walking. So
we're not going to have that. You know what? We like Melanie. I think she's great. And the variables here really are in her favor. And this is just uncalled for.
Crossing our fingers, we may have a special appearance by none other than Julian Assange's father, John Shipton. He may very well be our guest on Monday evening because he is in Melbourne.
Oh, that's good. Why we say that is Australia, it's perfect timing. When we go live on our show, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning there, which is really nice. So whereas when people are in the UK, it's all screwed up for us. It's all about us.
That is correct.
No, we're going to talk to Julian's dad, John, about the documentary Ithaca, and that's Ithaca with a K. I haven't seen it yet. I will definitely be watching it. I don't think it's out.
Maybe out yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's out.
And then on Wednesday, we will be speaking with Chris Leal, who is running for State House in Texas. We want to get any of the Texas candidates that would like to come on over the next 2 weeks.
If you are a non-corporate Texas candidate, we'd love to have you on. We will give you a platform.
100%.
You guys have the first primary.
And then after that, we will be speaking with Andre Stackhouse, who is the new head of Whole Washington. They are apparently doing some new stuff regarding a ballot initiative in the state of Washington. What is Washington State? What is it? It's not the Apple State.
Maybe it is. It might be because New York is the Big Apple, but it might be the Apple State. That sounds kind of
New York's the Empire State.
Right, so, but New York City is the Big Apple. But I do think that you might be right about you might be right about that. That sounds right, like Washington apples.
And Washington is one of our most beautiful states. Unfortunately, it's one of our most corporatized states. Wow. You can thank Bill Gates. You've got Silicon Valley.
Speaking of psychopaths.
Yeah, and then you've got another one in Seattle is not that far off in that regard.
Although if I can do a little bit of oligarch bashing for a moment, I just saw something recently. I think it was in today's news and I am not really on social media, but every once in a while, something will come across that I see. And is Elon Musk basically throwing a temper tantrum that the news isn't nice? It looked to me like he put something, not that they treat him unfairly, but he recently just put something out. I mean, like in the last day or so, Elon Musk basically saying, the news just isn't nice. It's always like, it's not uplifting. It's depressing. It was something ludicrous.
I can't tell if he's deliberately trolling or if he's legitimately trolling. Either way.
No, it was real. Like he is, this is lack of awareness at a level that is just pathological.
Pathological.
I'm serious. But we have a lot of good things coming up is what you're saying.
Yes, we certainly do.
We have a lot of good things coming up. We're launching a new little venture here that we're going to get more into later on.
That's a secret.
That's a secret.
We'll tell you soon enough. With that said, we appreciate you guys. It's been a great evening. We'll see you next Monday.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.